thank you very much for tuning in. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin. I'm here with Dom. Dom, welcome back.
Well, thank you. It was I had a nice time away, although it did suck to be away for what I think was one of the most interesting episodes to analyze in recent years, although Sarah Freeman was kind enough to step up and fill the void, and hopefully we can cover all of that ground today as well.
Yeah, definitely. Sarah was fantastic. Thank you once again to her for filling in for you. Let's get into that. I do want to hear your thoughts on last week's episode. Unfortunately, we lost America and England's hero, Debbie Wanner, is out of the game. How did you think, what did you think, I guess, about how all of that went down? Like, particularly, like, was it the right or wrong idea to be gunning for Debbie there?
Yeah, Debbie, gone but not forgotten, and I'm sure she will be gracing our TV screens again before too long. I'll preface this by saying one thing I'm liking about this season so far and a lot of the interesting situations that have come up is so often it's like you have one or two people on this side and one or two people on the other side, and it makes sense to analyze things through their eyes because everyone else is kind of just playing along with whatever they want to do. But this season it feels like everybody has their own agenda, and you can think about what makes sense for Aubrey or Sydney or Michelle and Julia or whoever else. And then on the other side, I think Jason, Scott, and Ty all have their own interests, which might be served in different ways. And so you can legitimately think about it from five or six people's perspectives, and that makes it so much more rich and complex.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, when we talk about, at the end of this episode, looking ahead, I really do want to go through it, like, almost person by person. The only one I think we can kind of just tag along with someone is probably Joe, is probably, it looks like, just going to do, at this point, what Aubrey wants, right?
Yeah, although even Joe is kind of funny, because he is loyal to Aubrey until the end, but that doesn't involve always voting the way that Aubrey wants him to vote, because he has, like, these strong convictions about what he should do, which, like, it seems kind of quixotic 32 seasons in to be loyal to the team no matter what or whatever. But
can you define that for me and the other non-Oxford grads?
Oh, go buy a dictionary. it sounds kind of weird this many seasons in, but it actually puts, like, an interesting wrinkle in the game, but, like, you have to play around that, and the fact that it doesn't make sense to you doesn't matter, because that's how Joe's going to vote, and you're not going to overcome his moral code just by the force of reason.
Right. Well, getting into last week's vote, I am certainly of the opinion, and that it will continue to be the case today, I feel like in these kinds of scenarios, like in these kind of Three Amigos-esque scenarios, generally speaking, for most people in the group, they're going to be far better off just biting the bullet and putting votes on the people and either making them use the idols or whatever the advantage of the season is, or making them go home.
Yeah, and so if you are in that Three Amigos seat where you're trying to cause chaos or dissension in the ranks on the other side, you need them to think somehow that any of them could go home, that there's no way of predicting what you're going to do, and any assumptions they might make about their own safety could be upturned at any moment. And so doing what the Three Amigos did, where they've just broadcast the fact that they were going to vote for Philip, is basically the worst way to go about it. And so I was worried when Jason and Scott essentially made it public knowledge that they were gunning for Sydney and that all of their revenge was focused on Sydney. And we did see them in this episode say, oh, well, maybe we could vote for Aubrey because they wouldn't expect that. But I feel like the fact that they wouldn't expect that is already a bad sign, because if there is an expectation in place, then someone in the middle, like Michelle, let's say, can feel very happy just staying the course because they know it won't rebound on them. And realistically, it was never going to rebound on someone like Michelle or Joe anyway, but you need them to have some kernel of doubt about that so that maybe they could be convinced to change their minds.
Right. I mean, it does seem like Michelle and Joe, as you described it earlier, are in the positions of the people who are kind of just going along with the plans that other people are hatching. And early on, it seemed to be Sydney and the combo of Sydney and Aubrey. And now it does seem to be primarily Aubrey. And it doesn't really seem like much is changing for Michelle or Joe.
Right. And so if what you're relying on is Aubrey maybe overthinking things and causing everyone to do something that ends up not being wise if they knew the full story, then you need Aubrey to think that it could be her. And it seemed like she did, to a large enough extent that she flipped the vote onto Debbie, and obviously that's been a very contentious decision. But I think maybe they were too clear about the fact that they just wanted revenge on Sydney. Because firstly, it stopped Sydney from coming back to them if that's something she needs to do down the line. But then also, you need Aubrey to be that scared of you that her decision-making process is going to be thrown off a bit.
Right. Like, I think it is, if it's going to be defensible for anyone, like I said, I think it's often defensible for most people in the Alliance. But certainly whoever's getting the blowback vote, if the idols do get played, definitely has reason to worry. Kind of an extreme example that we saw back to Exile Island season 12 was Aris was always the one concerned pertaining to the immunities and Terry and that super idol, because he knew that Terry's vote was always going to be on him.
Yeah, it's like you want it to be almost rational in a way for Aubrey to put some kind of weird plan in place to avoid that blowback, because there's a chance it could be on her. Like, you, like, based on the information that she has, you want that to be a smart decision for her, but not right. too smart to where it's actually the right call.
But and it looks like, to the guy's credit, like, they obviously did do that. Aubrey, I think it was probably mostly a function of feeling like it was too likely she would leave if she didn't turn it on one of the other women, did end up flipping the vote, and they got to stay all alive and with their idols. And now, to their credit, I would say they are at least thinking on the next level to whatever, for whatever that's worth, and saying, well, they all think we're going to be targeting Sydney, so let's go for Aubrey instead. And like you're saying, maybe that's predictable, and maybe that, like, the fact that they're thinking in those terms in the first place is a problem, but I think it's at least them thinking about the game on some kind of advanced level.
But also on a level where it drove away Ty, because if they had just stuck with the plan and said, okay, we're voting for Sydney, maybe Ty wouldn't have been so alienated by them. But instead, Ty is, you know, taking a liking to Aubrey. And so when he broaches right. the idea of keeping her and they're just like, no, we're voting for Aubrey, it's like, well, you're almost doing what you can to push him away at that point.
Right, they're like, hey, that's really interesting feedback time. No, our idea, actually, let's vote her out immediately, like this next vote. But your opinions are totally valid. We definitely are hearing what you're saying.
Right, it's not even like they're disagreeing with him. It's they are just outright rejecting the idea immediately to his face in the most just kind of inconsiderate way possible. And, like, yeah, it's a bad idea. Like, you don't want to bring Aubrey into your group, probably, but at least make Ty think that it's on the table and that his voice is being listened to. And it's like the most basic survivor mistake, right? Of just not making your alliance members think that they have a voice in the discussion.
Totally. And, like, even if you're already thinking Aubrey's the big threat, she's the one we got to get out, and then Ty coming to you and saying, hey, I'm really liking Aubrey, let's bring her in, that probably is saying, well, Aubrey's doing really well. If even Ty wants to bring her in, that's even more reason we need to get rid of her. But you don't say that to Ty right then, right? I think that's essentially what we're getting at.
Yeah, that's right. And so when you hear that, you raise your estimation of Aubrey even further in your mind. But then to the extent that that affects your decision, it shouldn't be in a way where you're telling Ty that you think he's an idiot, essentially.
Right, exactly. And I really don't want to make it sound like I'm defending the guys or whatever. I don't want to make Eliza Orleans mad. I would never want to do that. But it is kind of a classic survivor scenario where, like, I'm sure it happens all the time that you have some ally that out of the blue almost comes to you with what seems just like an atrocious idea. And I understand the impulse is probably like, no, we need to shut this down immediately, right? Like, I do kind of get that. But I think the way it certainly, at least that it was shown, and it probably the way that Scott seems to come across normally, that it went down, is they did, like you're saying, just completely shut Ty right down to his face and essentially say, your idea is a bad one, and in fact, we're going to do the opposite.
Yeah, so related to that, let's talk about this sabotage quickly, because I know Jason and Scott saw it as successful in the sense that their idea was, we're going to impair their decision-making by just depriving them of these basic comforts, and hopefully that's going to cause them paranoia, they're going to be more irritable, more uncomfortable, and they're going to make some bad choices. And then on top of that, we're going to be more attractive goats for someone to take to the end, so they might try to keep us. And to that extent, it seemed to work. However, Ty clearly was not on board with any of this. It's just so fundamentally opposed to who he is. And they may have been assuming that Ty is so meek and so pliable that, of course, he's just going to stay with us and not do anything. But clearly that turns out to not be true. It's like it's true until it isn't. And when it isn't, it's catastrophic for you in the end.
Right, right. Well, let's get into that, because, like, in this early on in this episode, they have a confessional from Jason basically setting it up, saying, like, hey, sabotage, strategic idea, and mission accomplished, right? Like, they got this is why Debbie ended up leaving. It almost seems like the editors are giving them credit. Did you get that same vibe? Because it seemed, it at least came across to me that way, that they almost were validating the sabotage as saying, this is why the guys ended up getting their way.
Well, that came across to me as just them gloating more so than anything else. Like, Jason does not strike me as a type to say, well, you know, it worked, but maybe it wasn't the best idea based on the information we had at the time. He's just going to be like, yeah, fuck it, it worked.
pretty results oriented, yeah.
Right. So I think that was just Jason being Jason. And I can understand being on a high after that tribal basically worked out perfectly for them. Like, if you could have told them Aubrey's going to vote out one of her closest allies and limit her own options, you will keep both of your idols in your alliance, and, you know, Julia is still someone who might come over from the other side. You can't really ask for much better coming out of that tribal.
Right. I mean, short of, like, the other six people getting medevaced on the spot.
Right. Or, yeah, Joe just, like, quitting in protest or something.
A catastrophic disaster as the set collapsed at Tribal Council on Survivor 32. Like, Ty wins the game by default as everyone else gets medevaced.
Right. Yeah, I think Jason and Scott, like, they were kind of riding that high, and so maybe they didn't stop to think, well, maybe we should be a bit more considerate of Ty, or maybe we should, you know, be a bit more self-critical about what's going on here. And it's understandable to be that happy about it, but it's like, well, the game isn't over yet. You still have so many more rounds to go, and you're still not in that great a position if anything goes wrong, which it very clearly did.
Right. I mean, even if Jason in particular, to me, was the type to think, oh, what is the best idea as far as how I should be behaving after all of this goes my way? I really do think the more I see out of him, the more I think he's honestly asking, not maybe not in such explicit terms as this, but is thinking along the lines of, like, what would Russell Hance do? And I think Russell would blatantly rub it in everyone's face, and that's what Jason's doing too.
Yeah. So let's go back to what we thought about this decision from the other side's perspective, because Aubrey and Sydney, and I'm going to talk about them as a unit, but I think it's a different incentive facing each of them here, because Sydney, if she thinks she's a target, she wants to do anything she can to avoid any idol related nonsense. And so for her, you know, she doesn't have any existing relationship with Debbie, and getting out Debbie and flushing the idols in the process seems pretty perfect for her, all things considered. Whereas for Aubrey, coming into this round, if you said to Aubrey, well, she's going to lose a fellow brain, a fellow woman, and someone who has been loyal to her from the beginning, even if her loyalty manifests itself in odd ways at times, then that's really not a good outcome. So this seems to me like Aubrey was kind of desperate and just looking for anything that would get her through this round, and so she would have some time to regroup and to, you know, think about the new state of the game and think about her options moving forward, and that's fine. But to me, that suggests that she wasn't confident about Julia, she maybe wasn't confident about some other people, and she was looking for just anything that would work immediately and just not have to think about it anymore.
I don't disagree with that, but I personally, that's exactly what I would be doing, I think, is like, while I am an advocate is saying, like, yes, theoretically, I think you should be biting the bullet and just, you know, spinning the wheel and taking your chances and hoping it's not you. If I was Aubrey, I'd be freaking the fuck out in that scenario. And I actually do think, just while what you're saying is right, like, she is losing a fellow woman and a brain and someone who has worked with her quite well in the past and probably would again in the future, I don't feel like Debbie would have really probably wanted to go to the end with Aubrey. Debbie, as she puts it herself, is someone who plays offense, and I think she is someone who would think in the terms of, like, who can I beat in the end? And I don't think she would ever realistically arrive at Aubrey as that person. Like, so I think it's very possible that Aubrey's saying, Debbie, while right now is maybe on my side and could hopefully be on my side for a little longer, if I'm not confident in Aubrey's spot that Debbie really seems to want to take me, I have no problem with eliminating such a wild card if I'm really confident that I'm going to be the blowback vote if idols get played.
Yeah, it also decreases the target on you as well, where if the three brains as a unit are still left in the game, then even if you make it through this round with your current alliance intact, when you get down to final seven, let's say, and the three brains are still there, it's very tempting for Julia and Michelle, let's say, to flip over and try and make something happen, because mathematically they have to if they want to break you up then. Another thing to think about as well is we saw Aubrey get mad at Debbie because she was talking about details of the plan in earshot of people who maybe shouldn't be trusted with that amount of information yet.
Right.
And it wasn't like Debbie was trying to ruin the plan. She wasn't trying to sabotage anything. But if the ultimate effect of what Debbie's doing is to, like, drive away people who need to be brought in or to give away more information than should be out there, then it's basically the same effect if it ends up scuppering your plans. Like, it's no consolation to you that Debbie wasn't trying to do anything wrong.
Right. It's like when she's probably divulging too much to Julia, potentially. And as we, you know, Julia is doing quite a good job, I would say, playing the double agent and has been giving the guys a lot of information. But that's kind of like what I was talking about for why maybe it's not so bad for Debbie in particular to be leaving if you're Aubrey. Just kind of that wild card status is whether she's intending to do it or not. Like you're saying, her just kind of having loose lips could sink your ship, as it potentially almost did here.
Yeah, and a lot more on Julia later, by the way, because she's someone who I think is one of the breakout stars of the season and certainly of the past few episodes. But going back to this Aubrey and Debbie dynamic, which continues to be kind of strange, in the episode, it was framed as though we see Aubrey criticizing Debbie for like acting emotionally rather than logically and holding that up as the way to think about the game. But then when she was later talking about Debbie, it was in terms of, well, oh, I don't feel good about Debbie. I don't know if I can trust her. It wasn't like, oh, I've logically deduced a situation and this is why we have to get out Debbie. It's, I don't know if I can feel comfortable. I don't know if I can personally handle having to deal with Debbie in that kind of context.
Well, isn't that a reason, though? I would argue that that is like a logical enough reason. It's just the uncertainty.
I think it is, but I think that's the reason why that distinction that she was drawing kind of collapses on itself a lot of the time, where these logical decisions that you make ultimately come down to these emotional gut instinct reads that you have on people, like whether you can trust them, whether you have a good sense of what their priorities are. And ultimately, that's just your social skill, and that's not something that you can really quantify or analyze or put in a spreadsheet and get out the right answer.
You a big Malcolm Gladwell fan? Unrelated question?
No, I'm not.
I know.
We can save that for another time.
Yeah. I don't know. The more I talk about it now, the more I actually, for Aubrey specifically, I'm okay with this. And I get, like, for Sydney, I think if we want to talk about that, it's like, the alternative seems to be like she leaves if she doesn't get on board with this Debbie plan, right? And she seemed to be the one like spearheading it in the first place.
Well, the alternative is you split the votes as Debbie suggested. You put three on one person, three on the other, and then you know, no matter what happens, the only way this goes badly for you is if the two idols get played and they get played by exactly the two people that you target, which could happen, and it's certainly a possibility, but you know, it requires a lot of things to go right for them, and then you have to be the one person that they target. So the idea basically is you nominate one of your own alliance members as a sacrifice, essentially saying, well, the worst case scenario is they use the idols properly, one of our people has to go, but if that's not me, I don't really care that much. And so as we said, for Joe or Michelle, you know, they can happily sign up for this plan knowing that it won't fall back on them.
Right.
For Sydney, she can't be so sure. And so if she wants to sign up to this plan, which might still be the correct one, it might still be a risk that she has to take, she does that knowing that if it goes wrong, it's her ass on the line.
Well, I think the big counterpoint that was getting made is, if you are Aubrey, who cares if it's Sydney? If you think it's Sydney, who's going to get the blowback vote? But maybe, like we've been talking about, like certainly for me, if I was actually out there playing Survivor, I would be beyond paranoid constantly. I would be, every single voting confessional I gave would be Aubrey this week. Just me going, please, 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 right. Don't be getting blindsided. Like, please, God, let me just get through here. So the more I think about it, like I said, the more I think it makes sense. But like, there is definitely validity to the idea that like Sydney leaving is totally fine with me if I'm Aubrey too. Like, better than Debbie.
Yeah, it seems like the two of them have a good thing going at the moment, but I very much doubt that Sydney would want to take Aubrey to the end, and I doubt Aubrey would want to take Sydney to the end either. So if you know you have to cut her at some point, why not let her own former alliance mates do that job for you in the process of doing something that you wanted to do anyway?
Right. Yeah. No,
But again, it's like if it's your name on there instead of Sydney's, then exactly. You're completely screwed.
And that's really what it comes down to for me. And I guess the other big determining factor that it comes down to is how good you feel about Julia, because it does seem like they really were legitimately concerned. Like, I think Julia's gone. Right, I think Julia is the boot, at least based on what little we saw in that 42-minute episode. But I really feel like, based on what we saw from Aubrey prior to Julia getting the necklace, she was done.
Right, and Julia, based on her secret scene, seemed to be somewhat aware of that she had dodged a bullet by winning immunity there. And if that's the case, I think it's a failing on the part of some, if not all, members of that alliance to not let Julia know that she was safe. Because if she's able to pick up on that, then it's an even greater incentive for her to try and jump over and make something happen over there, which I think she maybe could have done. Certainly, if not in that episode, then at least in the most recent one.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's kind of like a chicken or an egg situation where it's unclear whether Julia wants to be a double agent because she's feeling on the outs with the Girls Alliance, or if they're feeling sketched out by her because she's being a double agent in the first place.
Yeah, it might be the same kind of thing as happened with Nick, where his fear of a women's alliance is what brought that alliance into existence. And it might be the same kind of thing here, where Julia is maybe just exploring her options and thinking about it, but in doing so, and doing so so transparently, she becomes a double agent, like maybe earlier than she wanted to be. And so everyone else is also picking up on that and forcing her into that role. And so I think that is the big question for this vote, is whether you trust Julia and how that factors into your voting decision. Because if you want to split the vote, which I think if you knew Julia was on board, that is exactly what you would do. Like mathematically, it makes perfect sense. But you need all six votes to coordinate in a certain way. And if Julia wants to flip her vote, well, suddenly they have the majority now and you've given that to them. So if you doubt her that strongly, you need to find some other play, and the best play might be to just vote for her. And that's what we see them try to do. And so when that fails too, and now you have the plan C of voting for Debbie, the issue I have is it seemed like Julia was in on that plan still. Like we see Julia vote for Debbie, right? And so if she wanted to make a move this round, she could still do it, I assume. It might be a bit more difficult. She might have to put herself out there a bit more. But fundamentally, if Julia wants to overturn the game this round, she can still do it based on the information that you've given her.
She can, for sure. But I think a major part of the plan and a big reason why you might be more inclined to vote for Debbie than, put the votes on the guys every single time is I think they were hoping to burn a couple idols when that Debbie vote ended up going down, which did not happen. And I think a big piece of potentially why they went for that is they were not only getting Debbie out, who is potentially a wild card. And again, I'm not saying it's 100% the right move, but they were also, I think, strongly hoping that at least one of those idols would get played. Like, I don't think while they've heard Ty openly talk about, hey, there might be some ridiculous idol power in play this season, they still don't know what that is, I don't think, or how it works. Or do you know the answer on the secret scene? Neil explained it to Aubrey potentially. Did you hear about this?
So my understanding is they know that Jason had an idol. They at least strongly suspected that Ty had an idol, and they didn't know what would happen if those two idols joined together. So I might be wrong about that. But I think even given that minimal set of assumptions, I think it still makes sense to want to split the vote and to do what they did. And then I don't see how that really changes things. Because the problem is, so if Julia isn't with you on this vote, maybe she still votes with you. But what she can do is she can tell the guys to not use their idols and to stand pat. And so going into the next round, you face the same dilemma of how do we get around these idols, except now you can't split the vote even if Julia is with you or is pretending to be with you because you just don't have the numbers anymore. And at each successive vote where these idols don't get played, this is still going to be an issue. And as we get down to the end and it's more likely that one of them wins immunity, you know, this is always going to be a problem. And I feel like between those idols and Julia maybe being disloyal, you're going to have to take a big risk on one vote at some point. And I think this might be the one to do it, because if it works, it's just neutralized entirely. Whereas if you leave it too long, even if one vote goes your way, you might still have like a remnant of that to worry about later.
Right. I think you're right. And I think this is probably the time to do it. But I do still feel like there's got to be an overwhelming sense of like, it's such a big gamble potentially to split the votes here if those idols do go the disaster scenario, which I, Aubrey, recognize is certainly not going to happen every time. But if they do, it's going to be me or Sydney who ends up leaving. And over here, you know, behind door number two, I at least have the possibility of, it looks like, getting Debbie out for certain. So like, while I think you're right that the bigger issue in her mind probably should be these idols, or, you know, this issue potentially is not going to go away the way that this is being played right now, and I'm just going to have to face the same thing next round, I still do understand the impulse of like, especially in a game that seems this wide open, where she's probably not going to be confident in like thinking, okay, if I could just make it through here, I have a really solid path to the end with people I can beat. She's probably thinking, okay, now even if I make it through here, it's still wide open, so I'm probably going to take this more certain thing. Like, I do kind of understand that.
Yeah. Well, one other thing you can do, if I guess if you're certain that Julia is going to go and feed this information back to them, you could, well, I was going to say, you could tell her that it's going to be a split vote between Jason and Ty, and that therefore they need to play their idols. Hope that that gets back to them, and then you jam your four or five votes, not including Julia, on Scott, and hope that that just works out well. Although,
that's putting a lot of faith in Julia, who seems to be the one person you don't really trust.
Well, it, it's like it's putting faith in her to betray you enough, but not too much. Right, which is kind of it's a narrow window. So.
It's like the double Tyrion Lannister strategy.
But yeah, so I think maybe this was the time to pull the trigger. But when you're in that position and you know it could be you if it goes wrong, it's so hard to justify taking that risk. So yeah, I can't fault them too much for not going for it, even if I think it's the right idea.
Yeah, sure. Dom, give me your parting thoughts on Debbie Wanner.
Well, Debbie is fantastic, and I don't know if she's a reliable narrator on Survivor or in life.
I do know that she is not.
Okay, sure. But she, I mean, Debbie is sensational, and she, I don't know what more there is to say about Debbie. She defies all description, and all we can do is hope to bask in the full glory of Debbie Wanner at some point in the near future.
Yeah, I would definitely, certainly be on board with seeing Debbie back. If she ever does end up coming back, how do you think she could end up doing? Like, could she potentially win a season of Survivor, in your opinion?
I think the reasons that we love her so much are the same reasons that she will never win Survivor. Despite what we may have entertained towards the start of the season, I don't think that's ever going to be on the table.
Yeah, I think she approaches each round strategically the same way a lot. We see this a lot in Big Brother, with like Devin or like Audrey from BB17, where just every single round they want to be in every single person's ear, and know exactly what's going on, and it's just a matter of time until they flame out.
But yeah, I love the way that Debbie plays, where she just has this boundless self-confidence that what she's doing is the right thing to do, and that it's going to work, and nothing can possibly persuade her otherwise. And she just goes balls to the wall until either it works or it blows up in her face.
Right, and that is how you get on Survivor, and that is not necessarily how you win Survivor. Okay, so let's get further into this new episode now. And the first thing I want to really get into is something that Jason apparently spoiled on Twitter prior to this making air, which is Ty, right as they get back to camp from Tribal Council, gives Jason his half of the idol back. Did you, first of all, hear about this Twitter thing while you were over in Spain?
I did. And I also heard that Jason has apparently been told not to tweet about Survivor anymore for fear of spoiling anything else, which, given how frequently CBS spoils their own show by accident, is pretty rich coming from them, but I guess every little helps, I suppose.
Yeah, that is pretty hysterical. I'm surprised we don't see more Survivors get banned from tweeting. But I do, I love that they're able to tweet, by the way. I think it's so stupid when they didn't let him tweet. Sorry, go ahead.
I imagine lots of them have been banned from tweeting, but we don't know about it because they don't tweet about the show anymore. And we just don't, you just don't read about it.
Hey, Scoopin', if you wouldn't mind, we're trying to distance ourselves a little bit, potentially, here. Yeah. All right. Well, any thoughts on Ty potentially saying no here and keeping the idol, this now super idol, for himself? Because it's got to be pretty tempting. I don't think it's really within Ty's range to do it, but there are certainly some players I could see keeping that for themselves now and having the God mode idol.
Yeah, it has to be tempting. I think the question is, how dire do you think your position is? Where is Jason being an ally and Scott being an ally? Does that actually have any value to you anymore? Because if you think it's only a matter of time until the idols get flushed and then you just get picked off one by one, then maybe you just keep the idol and try and make a run at it somehow.
Right, exactly.
But then, but if you do have the super idol and you think that maybe Julia can come over or something's going to happen on their side and they'll continue eating themselves, then yeah, I think you stick with it. You give Jason the idol back and you don't jeopardize what seems to actually be a pretty good thing that you have going here.
Right, yeah. I think what it comes down to for Ty is how valuable these two guys are as allies. Like, it seems there is at least an argument that can be made for hang on to this super idol, let them get picked off, and then take a run at it by yourself. But it seems like if you do that, who at the end of the game is really going to like you that much? Whereas you have potentially these two guys who seem to be nothing but loyal to you, who seem to at least want to keep you around for certainly the time being, potentially all the way, although more on that later. But it's probably a lot to be giving up just in exchange for a super idol, even as powerful as a super idol is.
I want to ask you at this stage, and maybe the answer changes significantly over the course of this past episode, but how big of a jury threat do you think Ty was coming into this week? Because the instinct is to say, well, he's such a nice guy and everyone likes him and respects him and he's a hard worker and he always tries his, he plays his little heart out in the challenges and so on. But in reality, when it comes down to a jury vote, I'm not seeing where he gets a majority from.
It obviously, like, always depends, right, on who he's sitting next to, first of all.
Right, but just thinking about all the people who are left in the game still, like, Nick and Neil, I don't think have any particular reason to want to vote for Ty. Debbie seemed, I mean, who knows what Debbie thinks about anything, but she seemed fairly ambivalent about Ty. Obviously, Scott and Jason seem to like the guy, but that's only true for as long as he's working with them. And if he's working with them, then he's trying to sit with them in the final, so their votes aren't on the table anymore. And I think I agree that he beats the two of them fairly easily. But if someone else sneaks in, or he has to get there with some other combination, then if he has to burn them the way he did this week, then maybe he loses them. And then I think this other alliance that they're against at the moment, depending on how Ty got there, they might resent the fact that he did it, firstly, without them, and then secondly, with the help of the two people who are reviled for being for their behavior. So
right.
I'm not sure where... I can see why Ty might seem like a jury threat, but I don't know if he actually would be in practice.
Right, especially... Like, I think he's a great default jury threat. If he's up against there in a random season against people that no one on the jury particularly cares for, then Ty's going to do great. I think people are going to have an easy time saying, well, out of these three, I would much rather see Ty get $1 million than anyone else. But I think it's also probably worth flagging up, at least based on his answers with Jeff. He does not seem to be like anyone who's, seem to me like anyone is going to be talking himself into any jury votes, and could potentially talk himself out of some jury votes.
Right. Like, I think if you ask people outside the context of the game, you can give $1 million to anyone, who's it going to be? A lot of them would say Ty, but I don't see how Ty gets to that stage in the course of a season of Survivor where he has to do all of these things to make it to the end, especially given his position in the game where it seems like he's going to have to bob and weave his way through, and he's not going to have an easy route to the finals.
Right. I came in here 2 weeks ago and said maybe Ty is the most beatable person in final immunity challenges. I'm now wondering if running the table in challenges is Ty's best bet.
I think it might be. And Ty might also be the ideal decoy jury threat for somebody else, where you can point to Ty and say, well, of course, Ty's going to win in the end, when in reality, he might struggle to get all the votes. And, like, because we saw...
Like the lunch lady Denise figure?
Yeah, because we saw Julia contemplate flipping over because, well, she can go to the end with Jason and Scott, who no one really likes, and they know that they have to cut Ty before the end because, obviously, you can't let Ty get to the end. That would just be a stupid idea. And so I think everybody should almost be applying that same logic and thinking, well, I want to flip over before anybody else does so that I can get in on that action. And, like, obviously... Joe, for instance, isn't going to do this, but if you were able to teleport into Joe's body and start running the game and making decisions for Joe, you would be flipping over so fast that Aubrey wouldn't be able to see where you'd gone.
It
just seems so on paper, it seems such an easy call that I'm surprised like Michelle wasn't trying to do it before Julia was.
Well, that's the thing, is I think maybe that's why they're all so concerned about Julia, is because it seems like such an obvious and easy thing to do.
Right. And because, like, Sydney, for instance, can't really go back to them, and Aubrey can't go over, and it makes sense for her to stay where she is. But for someone like, someone like Julia or Michelle, or maybe even Debbie, if she was starting to get ideas of her own, then that has to seem like such a tempting offer, right?
I mean, it wouldn't honestly surprise me that much, knowing very little about any of, like, anything beyond what we've seen on the televised episodes, if... Michelle hasn't even talked to Jason and Scott since the merge. Like, they've never had a conversation.
Yeah, or if Michelle hasn't even talked to, like, I don't know, Joe, for instance, and it all goes via Aubrey or something.
Right, right. Okay, so let's move on here. Before the intro song and everything, we get some Aubrey confessionals, and I want to save those just for a little bit because plenty of Aubrey to be discussing for sure this week. So let's get into the reward challenge quickly. And I actually... really, really liked what they ended up doing here. They split it into three kind of separate mini games where we're playing three different competitions, one for food, one for letters from home, and one for an advantage within the game. Did you like this challenge design?
Yeah, I love the idea. I don't think it makes sense to do when you only have eight people left because you guarantee that at least one of these mini challenges is only going to have two or three people in it, and then it's not going to be that competitive. So I think... if this was happening with like 11 or 12 people, then it would actually be pretty solid.
Right. With eight people, you really are opening the door for just one person to be on something and not even having to show up.
Yeah, which is just such a bad outcome. And like, it just looks absolutely terrible. So, I mean, I'm glad it didn't work out that way, but I think they dodged a bullet there for sure.
Yeah. I did think it was at least interesting. I always like just that Survivor is throwing stuff in there and trying to keep it fresh and seeing what works.
Yeah. We did get the classic Michelle confessional talking about how good it felt to beat Jason and Scott, because that's not foreshadowing at all, guys. No, nothing to see here. Move along.
Well, okay, while we're on that, because this is really all that we saw from Michelle at all this week, as far as I could tell. But she did have that big confessional after the reward win. She got the food. Julia ended up beating Joe in like 30 seconds for the letters from home. Michelle ended up beating Jason and Scott for the food. And Michelle said, it felt so good to beat Jason and Scott. And then we got the musical sting that we always flag up. And then she later immediately went on to say, it's a little nerve-wracking that Ty won an advantage, another sting, and then this big musical swell. Like, this to me is the exact kind of stuff that we should be picking up on, like, every single time. And this is something I actually meant to bring up last week, because this happened at the live Know-It-Alls event. I was sitting watching the episode at Caroline's next to Mike Bloom, and at Tribal Council, as Debbie was about to get voted out, they had subtitled, and we always talk about the subtitles being important. As Aubrey made some comment, Debbie responded with, I love her, and it got subtitled, which meant good night, and I turned to Mike Bloom and I said, we don't need to watch the rest of this episode. That's it for Debbie. Like, this is the kind of stuff that's like, this is all I need to see, are these kind of Michelle confessionals.
Yeah, when I see people say that Michelle's winner edit is dead after this week and that Aubrey is taking over, I just think, I desperately want that to be true. Like, I'm on board with what you want, but that's just simply not what's happening. And this confessional is the perfect example of that, where, and I'll preface this by saying, I like Michelle, but Michelle, as we see on this season, is one of my least favorite, like, survivor personalities in a long time, because literally the only content she gets, it isn't interesting, is only put in there to prepare us for her eventual win, which we know is going to be underwhelming given how it has to come about. Because it seems like it can't possibly come about in any kind of normal, realistic way.
Right. I'm convinced it's going to be some kind of backing into it. They are really going heavy at, like, she deserves to win this season. This wasn't a fluke at all. It seems to be really what they're pushing.
Yeah, they really are telling us rather than showing us. Like, they desperately want us to believe that Michelle is deserving to win the season instead of just giving us any kind of on-screen evidence for why that might be the case.
Right. I want to go back to something you just said that really took me by surprise, because based on what we've seen, why do you like Michelle?
I don't know. She seems kind of fun. Based on like Twitter and everything else, like, she seems just like a sane, well-adjusted adult, and yet she's been thrust into this role on the season that I just object to in a big way, because partly because if it does come about as a result of a medevac changing the game, which I think is a likely outcome at this point, it's going to feel obviously underwhelming if you were rooting for somebody else whose game just got either directly ended or derailed by that. But then also the fact that it had to come about in that way, which seems so easily avoidable, like we said about the Caleb thing and so on, where the conditions don't need to be this bad. And yet, you know, this is the kind of thing that you get, and it's not the season's fault that this is the case. It's the producers just not caring about what happens there.
Yeah, I don't want to say it's them not caring, because I think they do care. I think it was just underestimated how extreme it was going to be.
Well, they care in the sense that, like, they're not just going to leave them to die or whatever, but this is an easily avoidable outcome, and they just didn't take the obvious steps needed to avoid it. So,
right, some wrong calls were definitely made. I think that's definitely fair to say. But Dom, every week I try to poll the people that follow me on Twitter, asking who their winner pick for this season is. And I always try to frame it in the same terms that you did, where I set it up as, regardless of who you are rooting for to win, who do you think is going to win this season? And it's been, Michelle's been right around the 50 to 60% range. This week she came in at 50%. Aubrey now up, though, to 40%, and the field down to 10%. As you alluded to, another huge episode for Aubrey here, and a lot of people talking about how this could potentially be a winner edit. I take it you're not nervous, and honestly, I'm not that nervous about it either.
Right, and this is the thing. Like, yes, Aubrey had another fantastic episode, and yes, Michelle was barely on the screen for most of that episode, but that's the point. It's the fact that Michelle, despite not featuring in the episode in any kind of relevant way, it still just pops up at these incredibly convenient moments to give us her thoughts on things which really just don't relate to her. Like, she doesn't need to be the one to tell us this stuff. And what she says about it isn't especially insightful, and yet she's constantly the one to get her voice in there. And so, you know, why is that the case? Like, do they just is someone in the editing team just in love with Michelle randomly, the same way that you were preseason? Or is there something else going on here, maybe?
Even at this tribal council, where she didn't get any questions or was not referenced by name once, a few times they just cut to Michelle, like, looking pensive, like, as someone else was responding. Like, nothing to do with the question or the answer.
Right, and it's there's been this kind of backlash almost against the people who think that Michelle is going to win after we get an episode like this where the refrain is, oh, well, I bet you're eating your words now. Clearly, Aubrey is now the front runner. And it's like, well, yes, if only wishing made it so. But in fact, like, I don't think most of the people who say that Michelle is going to win wanted that to be the case a priori. That's just what they think is going to happen based on what they see. They can't just flip that switch off and decide not to see that anymore.
Right, exactly. It's not like I just am blindly in love with Michelle and am not willing to accept any alternative outcomes. It's based on the episode. Okay, that you know, setting that aside, based on what I'm seeing on the episode, only validates that, Dom. But yeah, I mean, let's get into Aubrey and like why people are saying this, because she certainly had a massive episode yet again. It seemed like every single scene almost was Aubrey getting some like dynamic confessional that was spot on about exactly what was happening and how she was perceiving everything that was going on around her. So like, I do understand this, the people who do on the surface see that and think, wow, this is glaringly positive content. And unlike my old defense about why they were showing so much Aubrey is because it pertains so much to the episode, we are certainly well past the point of like plenty of this could have been left out and they chose to leave it in. But I just still feel like that's got to be for a different reason.
Well, also, if it isn't Michelle, who else could it really be other than Aubrey? Because unless Ty is having the strangest journey and edit of all time, then I'm not sure who else is really in the picture. I know Sydney early on was looking quite good, but she, as we keep saying, she only appears when she absolutely has to. And if she's the winner, she's, you know, clearly people like her out there on the island. A lot of the audience seems to be rooting for her pretty hard. You could make her into a much bigger character and player than the edit is suggesting so far, and yet they're just simply failing to do that.
Right. Given what we've seen from Sydney, if she were to go on to win, we would not be getting hit this hard by Michelle and Aubrey instead of Sydney, I would say. I think we'd be seeing a ton through Sydney's eyes. Yeah. Well, staying on Aubrey, like, a lot of people are, you know, those not in the Aubrey is, oh my God, suddenly the biggest winner candidate camp, are talking about the idea of her being the new, like, Spencer figure who comes up just short but is getting all of the, like, narration confessionals. What's your take on that idea? Because, you know, someone who's in there at the finale but, you know, can't win the right immunity at the right time and gets cut.
Yeah, that's on the table. I also wonder what you think about Aubrey maybe being the third medevac that we're yet to see so far.
I think that is definitely something I would be on the lookout for in a big way. I feel like based on what we've seen, Caleb got quite a glowing edit through as a medevac person. And Neil, I think what little they showed of Neil was, for the most part, overwhelmingly positive. And they're making him look pretty cool and fun on the jury. If they are trying to build up the medevac people, I guess it could be Sydney potentially as someone that the audience is meant to like, or maybe Julia, or of course it could be Ty. Like, we're meant to be in love with Ty, probably to the point that they don't want us to see Ty get medevaced. Long answer to an easy question. Yes, I do think that this is very much in play, Aubrey being the final medevac here. And I think that does tie in nicely to your theory that you floated, you know, 6 weeks ago, that the reason production is potentially so low on this season is the person they probably saw as the eventual winner got pulled for no real reason.
And yeah, and if Aubrey is playing the type of game which would set her up for a win, and then that just gets snatched away from her at, you know, at the 11th hour, what else would you do other than give her, you know, at least give her some kind of justice through the type of edit that she would deserve, right?
Right, right. No, exactly. Like, they would probably, especially someone I would imagine that under those circumstances, given the treatment they gave Caleb, Aubrey is going to get a 30-second montage after she gets potentially medevaced about, like, stay tuned for Aubrey versus Joe Anglim season 33 or whatever. Like, she'll get the whole nine as far as stay tuned for Aubrey being the lock of the decade to come back, I would imagine, if she gets medevaced. Yeah. And I think, honestly, it would very much cheapen the season. Like, I don't think we've ever put it in these terms when talking about this potentially happening, like the big kingpin, so to speak, getting pulled. Like, I think kind of along the same lines as Mitch going out the way he did on Big Brother Canada 4 almost cheapens the entire season for me. Losing the big heavy hitter to a medevac has got to, at least to a certain extent, taint the eventual winner's game, right? Like, they didn't have to overcome the person who was probably the biggest obstacle.
Yeah, I thought we had put it in those terms, but if we hadn't, I okay. would join you in doing so now. That would cheapen it in a big way for me.
Yeah, totally. Okay, let's go back to Julia, who won the Letters from Home. And Julia is someone that we've referenced is really, really in an interesting position here in the game. She seems to be the person most heavily like playing the middle here. And she seems to be doing a pretty good job of at least making the guys feel good while, you know, she's giving them the information that they want. So I guess that's a good way of doing it. But it does look like they genuinely seem open to working with her and, at least from what I could tell, would have genuinely cut tie and gone to the end with her, potentially.
Right, and I think if this week had gone as planned and Ty hadn't been flipped over by Aubrey, then next week we might be looking at, with Ty's idol gone, she flips over to join the guys at Final Seven. They now have the majority. They pick off Aubrey and Sydney and Joe, let's say, and then they cut Ty, and then Final Four is, let's say, Julia, Michelle, and the two guys. They vote out Michelle, and Julia's a millionaire, potentially, after having played a stunningly impressive game for someone that young.
Yeah, and I mean, it's surprising almost, like, just given the demographic that she's in, that she was, you know, that she had, like, the wherewithal to go and, like, be the person playing the middle. And maybe, I guess, that says more about, like, the young girls that they typically tend to cast in, like, the Natalie Tenorelli mold, who would just never even consider it.
Well, it always sounds patronizing to say, oh, she's playing a great game for someone that young. I think at this point we can say she's playing an impressive game, or at least displaying an impressive willingness to engage with the game for anybody, regardless of their age.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how well it's going to work out for her, especially after she kind of got outmaneuvered by Aubrey here.
I don't know why everyone's saying she's 19. She told me she was 22, so I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah, I think like if Julia did go on to win, I would wish that that was the case, because if a 19-year-old wins Survivor, then that whole Fabio or Sophie Clark principle that we spoke about, where someone younger than you winning just invalidates all of your life decisions, that would, like, everybody would experience that with Julia. Like, you couldn't fail to experience that as soon as you become a Survivor fan.
The weirdest thing, not that you would know this because you're not a big sports guy, but, like, I remember being, you know, 20, 21 years old and being like, oh my God, people my age are getting picked in the first round of the NFL draft or whatever. And now it's like, oh my God, people my age are retiring. Like 28-year-old defensive backs are like, I've had enough. Like, it's crazy.
Well, I remember as well when the second chance voting was happening, and I know Spencer was getting ready to go out there. I was thinking, like, Spencer's going to play this game again and have a chance at $1 million, which he came pretty close to. And what am I doing during those like 3 or 4 months? Just literally nothing. I just, like, my life has not moved forward in any way. And yet someone, you know, all of these people who aren't that far away in age from me are just like having this life-altering experience as we speak.
Right. Like, Spencer is slightly older than you in real life, but you are past the age at which Spencer had already won $175,000 playing Survivor.
And you won't fail to remind me of that, I'm sure.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess staying on Julia a little bit, how do you think, like, this round she should be coming into play here as, like, potentially playing the middle? Like, are there ideas, if you are Julia, in potentially, like, filling the guys in on the plan? And, like, to the fullest extent, and actually, like, voting with them and potentially trying to make that your new thing?
Yeah, so I think it's a very tough question for Julia of what the right timing is. Like, as Cochrane love to say, it's all about timing. When do you decide to make your move? And I think she could have done it last week. She could have done it this week. Had things not gone awry this week, she could have done it next week instead. So lots of options on the table for Julia. I think, so last week, and by that I mean the final nine vote where maybe they could have split it, there's an obvious route to doing that, which is you convince Aubrey to stay the course and split the vote, and then you flip your vote, it's 4-3-2, you take out someone, and then going into this week, it's 4-4, except you have two idols on your side. And even if Michelle doesn't want to flip over and join you, the others have to be willing to fade two idols at the same time, just hoping for the best-case scenario of getting to draw rocks, which is really not an appealing proposition. For
right, and if one of the guys or Julia has the necklace there, it could potentially be a rock situation where it's four rocks being drawn against one as far as the alliance breaks right down. Yeah, it's not where you want to be.
Yeah, and so regardless of what happened to Final Nine, now that Debbie's gone, she still could have done that here. Like, because Debbie leaving actually sets that up perfectly for her, where Julia doesn't have to show her hand any earlier than she had to, and she doesn't have to rely on Aubrey being willing to split the vote instead of just piling votes on her or on somebody else. So coming into this week, I think at Final Eight, Julia could have just done that again, and I think that might actually have been the move. Now, you can't anticipate Ty... It's weird. Like, you have to anticipate Jason and Scott pushing Ty away, Ty then also arguably making a big blunder in deciding to move away from them, and Aubrey being able to like mindfuck him and flip him over. So all of these things have to go. So all of these things have to go wrong for it to punish you for waiting. But that seems to be what happened here.
Yeah, it really seems to me like Julia was, from what we could see or what little we did see of her communications with the guys, being pretty upfront with them and like really exploring the possibility of flipping with them. And I'm with you. I'm actually kind of surprised that she didn't end up doing that here, especially because it seems like she could pretty easily go to just Michelle and say, like, look, here's the scenario. I don't see the value in taking these guys out. I'm willing to draw a rock with them and their idols and potentially the necklace. So you could hop along with me and come on board this gravy train, and we could avoid that all entirely. I could definitely see that being a pretty compelling idea here in Julia's spot. But I guess the, you know, her not going for that probably means that she's feeling a little bit more comfortable than I would probably think she should be at this point. I think it's very possible she doesn't recognize how many people's radar she's necessarily on. So that'll definitely be really interesting to see play out. I really feel like, just to wrap on Julia, certainly one of the breakout stars, like you've said, of this season. I know this season's had a really big cast and has been really fun all around. But Julia, I think, really, really exceeding everyone's expectations preseason for the most part.
Yeah, Julia, I think, more than anybody has surpassed the expectations that I had for her preseason. And she seems like that kind of person who just has that kind of confidence in herself to just go out and do what she wants, which is kind of enviable in a way.
Yeah, definitely. I'm a big Julia fan for sure. Yeah, one thing we skipped over that we should definitely talk about is Ty ended up winning that advantage, and his advantage turns out to be an extra vote. And now, Dom, it is worth, of course, remembering at this point, had they even seen Dan Foley get the extra vote by the time they were finishing this? Now that I think about it, Steven had by the time he went out there, but had Ty even seen Dan with the extra vote?
So I believe Steven said that they hadn't. So this was, they went out to film season 32 before the relevant part of season 30 had finished airing. So they didn't know anything about any kind of extra vote or advantage at this point.
Okay, got it. So that makes things even more interesting because I know Steven has talked about this on Know It Alls, and I'm sure, you know, it's come up as we were talking about Steven himself last season. I think the conventional wisdom at this point is get the advantage, find out what it is, and burn it. Not burn it, but play it immediately for whatever that's worth, but get the stigma of having the advantage off of you as quickly as possible. But Ty's probably not going to be thinking in those terms. So this is going to be really interesting.
And also, I think Ty already has such a big target or stigma or whatever you want to call it that having something else piled on top of that doesn't really change the equation at all. Like, Ty is already going to be under the gun. He's already going to need to find a way to save himself. The fact that he also has this additional power that nobody knows what it is, maybe it adds fuel to that fire, but it, you know, that is only exacerbating something which was already the case. Like,
yeah,
everyone was targeting Ty. They're still targeting Ty. Like, nothing has changed there.
Right, and I think for that reason, I have virtually no issue with like anyone picking to choose to play for the advantage here. I'm actually surprised that Jason didn't opt to try to go for the advantage.
Yeah, that seems like the kind of thing where Jason specifically would be all over it, but yeah, I guess not.
Yeah, but Ty, certainly not a surprise. I think Ty is the kind of player who wants every advantage he can get and just make it through the next round intact, yeah. But I guess if you are Ty, now how does having this extra vote change things for you? Because I'm thinking, like I said, that he's probably not going to just play it immediately. I think he's going to want to hang on to it and make it really work for him in a big way. So I think he may hang on to it probably for potentially a while if he feels like he can.
So I think there was a debate to be had before about whether Ty's move was good or not to flip on the guys. Now that he has this extra vote, I think that firmly pushes it into the camp of this was a bad idea. Because if you have a solid alliance with you, even if it's only one or two people, then at this stage of the game, that extra vote could maybe swing the entire game in your direction. Like, going into the final seven, let's say, if it's 4 versus 3, but now suddenly it's 4v4 or 4v3 in the other direction, then that's a whole different ballgame. Whereas if you only have yourself and you don't have anybody wanting to work with you, then, okay, you have two votes instead of one, but that only makes it 5v2 or 6v2 instead of 5v1 or 6v1.
Right, so, the hard numbers are crucial as far as like just having the bodies there to put in ballots, yeah.
Right, and so I can imagine that they would target Ty sooner rather than later, because if you're Aubrey, let's say, and you feel like you're kind of clear of that idle paranoia now, well, are you going to vote out Jason, who doesn't have any friends left in the game, isn't going to win a jury vote, and is decent in challenges, and he's won one, and he's, okay, and he's won a challenge already, but he doesn't seem like a big threat in those going forward? Or are you going to vote out Ty, who potentially could win a jury vote, has an idol and an advantage, and maybe has more influence, and so on and so forth?
Yeah, well, I guess with all of that in mind, is the advantage now a disadvantage? Like, potentially, it looks like Ty is not going to, you know, parlay this advantage into a million-dollar victory. Are we at the point now where being the person who has the advantage is suddenly not where you want to be? Like, if it ever even was where you want to be. Like, maybe, potentially, like, if Spencer had gotten the advantage instead of Steven, Spencer would have gone out next or something along those lines. Like, I know, not to play, like, super counterfactuals, but things along those lines.
So I think the thing to keep in mind there is the advantage selects for people who feel that their position in the game is such that they need an advantage, if that makes sense. So you don't see someone who feels like they're on cruise control to the finals taking that risk in the game and putting themselves out there to get this advantage. Whereas you see someone like Steven or Dan Foley or whoever thinking, well, I actually need this additional help if I'm going to salvage my position. And so when they're eventually falls apart, it's tempting to put that down to the advantage instead of just the fact that they were going to lose anyway.
Well, I think in particular, maybe it's a little different for Spencer and Steven who went for it after seeing Dan Foley. But to that, but for Ty here, the last advantage he saw was Tony's Tyler Perry idol. And they've seen a lot of advantages be essentially free immunity necklaces historically. And I think, like, yeah, it's totally a self-selecting pool of people who probably need it a lot, but like, it's also, I think, a lot of the people just trying to keep it out of the hands of other people who want to know what it is. For instance, like, going back to Exile Island, if you think back to the Eat or Play challenge, it's Terry and Sally choosing to play, and also Aris choosing to play, because he knows he wants the immunity necklace too.
And with Steven, you can say, oh, the advantage was the proximate cause of him going home, and also the thing that made people want to vote him out in the first place. So it kind of failed him on both.
Right. Well, that's what I was getting at. Is the advantage now the threat of being the person with the advantage is that's way worse than the advantage is beneficial.
It's tough to say. Like, I feel like we won't see this advantage in the same form again in the near future, so we won't really have a big sample to draw from, but based on what we've seen so far, it doesn't seem like it's doing anybody any favors.
One thing, I was listening to Scott Green, fellow genius podcaster Scott Green, on the voicemails on RHAP this week, and he brought up the idea of, along the same lines as the hidden immunity idol, a hidden advantage where you don't know who has the advantage, just that someone has it. Because it seems like the problem with the advantage is not the advantage itself, it's the stigma that's attached to it. Mm-hmm. I don't know how that would be executed, but I do think that's at least like an interesting kind of idea. I thought that was good. Yeah. So Ty is in fact now your person with the advantage. It's going to be really interesting to see how that ends up playing out. Because Ty, I think, is someone who doesn't necessarily always think things through in like the most strategic terms and is potentially prone to acting on emotional impulse. So we could see Ty get kind of creative, I guess, with this extra vote. So staying on Ty, Dom, I tweeted this out sometime last week and brought it up when Sarah Freeman was filling in for you last week. Ultimately, the way this episode plays out is Scott gets voted out and Ty sits on that idol. And that is something I very much saw coming and was anticipating. Not like, congratulations me, I guess is my major point. But as I was watching this episode, with that in mind, it was really feeling like I was being steered in that direction, just like having that already on the back burner mentally. And so it was really interesting when Aubrey and Sydney now here work on swinging Ty over. And Aubrey in particular, and I think this is the kind of stuff that people are looking at as like really good potential winner stuff. When she's swinging Ty over, she says Ty wants to be true to himself and his natural state just isn't with Jason and Scott. Like, she is the good witch essentially, and they're the bad guys.
Yeah, and her appeal to him was pitch perfect as far as I can tell. Like, it was exactly what she needed to say, in exactly the way that she needed to say it, and it seemed to work absolutely to perfection.
Right. I wrote this quote down. She says, "I'm relying on you. I want you to be comfortable. This is your game. You're making a big move, and you have three people behind you." Like, that is Spradlin-esque. Yeah. Legit, and I'm not even using that term hyperbolically there. Like, that is a perfect thing to say to someone like Ty, I think. Yeah. So that's really, it looks like Ty is going to be, of course, the big decision maker here in more ways than one. Before we get to tribal council, though, Jason ends up giving his half of the super idol here to Scott. Now, this is something that was taking a lot of heat, a move here. It seems like, theoretically, something with no upside. Like, Jason can't possibly be leaving that night, so why ever put it on Scott's person when he at least theoretically could? I'm guessing this just came down to them thinking there was a 0% chance that either, you know, this was either going to be a super idol or both halves were going to be returning to camp that night. Did you have any takes on this? Are you going to berate them for doing that?
Yeah, coming off of last week, I was a bit confused about exactly what the rules were, because we saw Jason give his half to Ty the previous week. And so I wondered if maybe both halves need to be with the same person in order for that to work. But it seems like that can't be the case, because the whole point of the idol is to get the kind of scene that we got at the end of this episode, where someone is expecting to get the idol from someone else and they refuse to do it. And then that's game over. And it's a big, like, shocking moment. So they wouldn't, like, new to that before it even starts by making that the case. So yeah, I thought maybe there was some, like, aspect of the rules that we weren't seeing. And then when Jason gave it to Scott, that only kind of furthered my confusion. So I don't know if there's been any official clarification on that, or if you have anything to
interpretation
that.
Is that what they did last week of giving the idol to Ty was just probably, like, a gesture to, like, first of all, cause, like, confusion and show solidarity with Ty, but was probably just largely stupid. Like, they don't know that he's definitely going to give it back, and keeping a super idol, at least for a lot of people, was probably a tantalizing proposition. Here this week, I think it was, again, just, like, questionable judgment, because as far as I can tell, and what would obviously be the ruling, at least for me, if I was Jeff Probst or in production, whoever's making this decision, is after the votes are read, it doesn't matter who each piece of the idol is on, like, whose person they are on. Any two people with two halves of an idol can come together and void those votes if they are so inclined, regardless of where those idols happen to be.
Sure. So even if the intended target doesn't actually own either piece of the idol, they can still come together and save that person.
I would say totally. Yeah. If Jason had kept it and wanted, you know, Scott gets voted out and Jason, I think it would totally have been Jason looking to Ty and saying, "Let's go, let's give it to him." And Ty saying no.
Yeah, I'm sure there are lots of, like, arcane questions about the timing of, like, if I give my half first, but then the other person doesn't give their half, does that half, like, transfer ownership or whatever? Because there are lots of different scenarios you can play. And I think that's why you hear them using this very formal language about, I offer you my half of the idol. I accept your half, like, just to, like, really set that in stone. But yeah, I guess that's not going to be a relevant question anymore now that Jason's half is walking out in Scott's pocket.
Well, I would definitely say, you know, if there are some kind of, like, stupid rules about it, I think that would be a crazy decision on production's part. I think, like you said, what you want is after the votes come in, people looking at each other, wondering whether or not they should combine their idols. I think that's why you put the twist in there in the first place. Yeah. So this tribal council, a lot of just kind of, like, generic, almost, like, non-answers as far as I could tell. A lot of just random cuts to Michelle, as I flagged up, for no real reason. And Ty puts on kind of a performance saying he has to stick with the guys. And Aubrey, I guess it's worth flagging up. She did, I thought, a really good job as she was giving some answer essentially about, like, why she needs to be working against the guys. She does it in, like, a really complimentary way about, like, this NBA champion veteran and this badass Ranger, whatever she said, Army guy, whatever she said about him. I thought that was really strong stuff from Aubrey yet again. Yeah. And I don't think – do you think it's even up for debate at this point that – at the end of the season, essentially from what I can tell so far, basically regardless of how this goes, we are not sitting here saying Aubrey was the best player on this season. Is there any timeline that you can see conceivable at this point that where that's going to be the case?
I think Aubrey would have to make some horrific blunder for that to be true. And I know some people take issue with certain plays that she's made already, and maybe we would disagree with some of them too. But I just think the overall manner in which he's approaching the game and the way in which he's going about stuff is is head and shoulders above anyone else from what we've seen so far, at least.
Right. I may take issue with like certain strategic ideas, sure. But I feel like the way she is approaching the game and the way she is treating the other people and interacting with the other people, to me, totally stands out among the pack.
I would love it if when we get to the reunion show, the Aubrey that we see is basically the one that we expected to see preseason, and it's just like all Harry Potter and astrology and Moxie and so on.
Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah, she spends $1 million on bottles of Moxie. I really need to know if it's Moxie the soda that she's talking about. Like, my esteem of Aubrey is going to go way down if it's Moxie the soda. Yeah, worst player of all time if it's Moxie the soda. But anyway, okay. So I guess, Dom, any other thoughts on like tribal council or anything that you wanted to bring up from that?
Well, I do have a complaint to get on the record here, and it's
that doesn't sound all these like people... you.
No, absolutely not. It's rare territory, but I was inspired to do it this time. So there are lots of people who seem to, in these debates about whether Ty made the right move here, they seem to take issue with the idea that Ty. Like, they perceive that other people think that Ty should have given his half away and then would have been voted out. And they're like, well, clearly if Ty gave his half of the idol away, he would have got voted out. So why would he do that? That's a stupid idea. When, of course, like, what they object to is him flipping in the first place. And if he doesn't do that, then if he gives the idol to Scott, then it's still three votes on whoever they decide to vote for, and it's fine. So
right.
It's like they're objecting to something which doesn't exist for no reason. And
there's no timeline where they're both going to come in, is what you're saying.
Right. It's a typical kind of like Reddit argument where neither side makes any sense, and even the one which you kind of agree with, you want to slap for just being nonsensical. It's just, it's frustrating.
Yeah, sure. All right. Nonetheless, the vote ends up coming in here 4-2-2. Scott ends up getting voted out. As you flagged up, no real motivation here, no incentive for Ty to be giving the idol away and voting himself out. Yeah.
Yeah, I will clarify. When I say they should be slapped, I don't mean in the Dan Foley sense. So no drama about that, please. It's entirely metaphorical.
Okay, got it. A metaphorical slap. Like Homer Simpson when he gets that glove in that episode. That's a great episode. People know what I'm talking about, Dom. Don't shrug at me.
Okay. That's a nice reference you made there.
Thank you. Were you disappointed that we didn't get a bigger reference than wow from Scott?
Yeah, see, I feel like this moment was being set up well in advance. And I know we actually floated this scenario a few weeks ago, if I remember correctly, where like Ty would be asked to give his idol away and then just wouldn't do it. And
yeah. So
this didn't really come as a surprise to me. I felt like this was what we were building towards. And so when it finally came, it felt kind of underwhelming to me. Like, it was just like, yeah, okay, like I get what's happening here. And the way that Ty did it, like, he didn't just say no, he didn't do anything. It was just kind of, oh, sorry, in like a very Ty like way, but
he didn't even say anything. He just shook his head.
Right. There was no like big finality to it. It was just no, sorry, in a very meek tone, and that was it. That was the big moment, and it just completely deflated from there.
Yeah. Well, I do think Ty like felt bad about it, but I mean, he obviously knew the whole time, like we flagged up, he was in on this plan. It's not like he was voting with the guys and had some tough ethical decision at the end of it.
Right, and the moment you see that fourth vote for Scott, you know what's going on, so it's not like there's even any suspense about it anymore.
Right, I mean, like, earlier in the episode, Scott had a quote, and I mean, they, you know, both of them, Scott and Jason, both probably said, none of us are leaving, combined 20 times this episode, which obviously means one of them is leaving. And Jason had the necklace and Ty is presumably not going anywhere. Yeah, it did seem, as we flagged up, pretty telegraphed here how this was going to play out. But nonetheless, still a pretty fun, exciting Survivor moment along the same lines for me as Sierra voting out her mom. Like, it's a pretty straightforward thing if you really think about it. But I understand, like, why the producers would love it and why it would be hyped up as this big deal. Yeah. So I guess, Dom, parting thoughts here on Scott Pollard. Where does Scott rank for you among the all-time great pro athlete Survivor players?
They haven't had a great pedigree so far, right? Like, I guess Gary Hogeboom was the only one who didn't actively make an ass out of himself. So I guess Scott is falls behind him in that sense.
I think first of all, and this is another thing that Rob and Scott Green talked about, is if we're counting Tyler Fredrickson as a pro athlete, which I do not, because he never played in the NFL in a regular season game, but if we were, he would be certainly my number one pick with a gun to my head of who I'm drafting out of the pro athletes to play a game of Survivor that didn't have to win. Short of that, Give me Jeff Kent. I said I still stand by Jeff Kent. I think, especially if he's on a season without returning players, where he doesn't have a stick up his ass about Penner the whole time. I think Jeff Kent has a lot of potential, potentially. As I guess as potentially implies.
Yeah, not to win. I don't think Jeff Kent can ever keep it.
I think he can win.
I'm not seeing it. I think Cliff. I've seen less offensive things from Cliff to make me think that he couldn't win. I don't think that Cliff is going to be likely if he ever came back, but at least he wouldn't be just like off the radar from the first moment. So
going back to someone that you said, I actually always was somewhat of a fan of Gary. I thought he actually did a pretty good job. He and Danny seemed to have a really good thing going, and he just, you know, ran out of people.
Yeah, I think this whole experiment of casting former pro athletes, I get that it's kind of cheap in a sense, and sometimes it just doesn't work. Like, I am a big Steve Wright fan, but I don't know if there are you know, legions of closet Steve Wright fans out there. But a lot of them, I think, it works out pretty well. Like Scott Pollard, he was a good villain. He played hard. He didn't do it particularly well, I don't think, but he was at least, you know, doing his best at it. And he was a kind of villain where you can root against him, but also not thinking that he's some like absolute horrible scumbag in real life.
Yeah, I loved having Scott Pollard on the show. He, you know, he was one of many people, honestly. I know we talked about this with Julia. He really exceeded my expectations, both as a player and a character. Like, I know he definitely did some, like, debatable things, both, like, from obviously the whole sabotage thing, and also made some probably questionable moves from time to time. But I thought he really totally brought it and was really fun to have on the show overall. I would actually be into seeing Scott back much more than I would be into seeing Cliff Robinson back, for sure.
Yeah, I'm not saying any of them is going to be like winning a returning player season anytime soon, or any season of anything, but we'll leave it there.
I forgot you were such a big Steve Wright fan. I totally forgot about that. That's great, though.
Now, that's another cult classic right there. If you're not a Steve Wright fan, you really need to let Steve Wright into your life.
Yeah, I mean, he loses to Mike Chisel in the finals like every single time, though, when Zapatero takes the numbers. Yeah, okay, neither here nor there, I suppose, as things pertain to a season 5 years down the line. Dom, I think let's start looking ahead, and the person I want to be focusing on right now is, of course, Aubrey here, who seems to be the real power player as we enter this next round. What's the game plan here for her?
Okay, so here's my concern. So, like, in theory, this move that she made this week, this potentially brilliant move, should put her in a pretty good spot, because now the threat of Julia flipping is essentially neutralized, where she's traded in Julia for Ty, and so now even if Julia flips, well, that's only two votes. And even if Michelle flips with her, that's only three votes out of seven. So this foursome of Aubrey, Sydney, Joe, and Ty potentially could just run things for the rest of the game now if they wanted to. But I get the sense, and this is in part working backwards from our Michelle is going to be the winner theory, it feels like something's going to go wrong somewhere, right? Like, this isn't going to be the end of it.
But what could go wrong? All right, sorry. Don't acknowledge that. Yeah, I think if I'm Aubrey, I'm definitely thinking endgame now. Like, coming off of these last few votes where things seem to be pretty hectic and up in the air, I'm starting to probably be looking at who I can be locking in. I'm certainly looking at Joe first and foremost. He seems to be the person that I want to be locking in the most solidly. And then, yeah, I think Ty, it looks like a perfect time to be scooping up Ty, and Sydney seems to be totally down to roll.
Does Aubrey beat anyone left in the game, do you think?
Like, does Aubrey beat anyone left in the game?
Yeah.
You think Aubrey loses to everyone left in the game in a final two? Is that what you're asking me?
No, I'm thinking, who is there anybody that she loses to in the final?
Okay. Then you framed it backwards. But no, yeah, I do think...
No, I framed it entirely correctly, but...
You asked me anyway, if Aubrey beats anyone, and the answer is yes, she beats everyone, in my opinion.
What I asked you was, does she beat anyone in the sense of, for any given person, does she beat them?
I see. Okay, anyone mean... I gotcha. Yes, she does, I think. I think particularly this is a very good jury setup for Aubrey. I think like Nick, Neil, and Debbie would all enthusiastically vote for Aubrey. Ty clearly seems to really, really like Aubrey. I could easily see either of Scott or Jason voting for her just like out of respect. I do see that potentially being an idea. Who knows what Michelle would hypothetically do in the fake world where she's on the jury. Julia, I could see voting for Aubrey. So yeah, I think Aubrey's got to be the front runner. Do you see anyone that could potentially even come close to her?
I guess I was going to say Sydney, but it seems like they're competing for the same votes, except Sydney never gets Scott or Jason.
Yeah, I honestly feel like Sydney might be it's probably Sydney or Julia as the number two jury threat right now. I think Michelle is probably the clear number four behind. I think she probably beats even Ty at this point. And this is something that I talked about with Sarah last week. I still would probably hold strong that all of the girls beat all of the guys left in the game.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. Do you think that would be true even if Ty hadn't flipped this week? Like, let's say Jason and Scott get pegonged, but then Ty is able to worm his way through to the finals. I imagine he gets those votes. Depending on how the rest of the women leave the game, they might be angry at whichever ones are left, and so they might vote for Ty. So is that just like a categorical thing where like all of the girls always beat all of the guys, or is there some leeway there?
I feel like it's probably all of the girls beat all of the guys at this point. I think for Ty to win, he needs to find himself up there at this point against one of the against Jason or Joe probably at this point. But yeah, I think going back to kind of like extrapolate when I said I think Julia or Sydney is the clear number two jury threat right now. I still think Michelle is the bottom among the women. I think she would lose to all of the other girls. That's why I feel like if she's winning, it's got to be against one of the guys. And it doesn't seem like Ty is going to be the losing finalist, and probably not.
Right. And that's why it seems like Jason can't just be like leaving in a 6-1 vote next week.
Exactly. Exactly. I think like everything is starting to come together as far as the things we've been looking out for since the very early episodes. And honestly, I was thinking about it in terms of like, I definitely would love it if we weren't getting what I think is a pretty overt Michelle over Jason in the finals edit. But it is also kind of interesting, like feeling somewhat, you know, to say somewhat certain to say the very least about how certain I feel about it. It's interesting, like you flagged up, kind of reverse engineering how that could possibly happen. Because at this point, it's still very unclear how we get there.
Right. Because for Ty, we can say his move was good or bad in the abstract, but it feels like if you think about jury votes, he goes from maybe being towards the higher end of the group to plummeting pretty far down there. And then in return, he gets less of a target on his back. But then that's not even the case anymore because he still has that target, but he doesn't also have Jason and Scott there to share that target with him and also to work with him and shield him. So he's now much more in the spotlight. And also, he's less likely to win if he somehow does make it to the end.
Oh, I mean, Ty was certainly, apart from Scott, the big loser this week. Is there any question about that as far as like how his position in the game has changed? It looks like Ty is going to be, even though he has an idol and the advantage, totally under the gun here.
Yeah, I guess the argument could be, if he makes it to the end, the fact that he screwed over Jason and Scott, who nobody else liked, is going to earn him a lot of brownie points. Mm-hmm. But I don't know how much that's actually going to count for.
Yeah, I mean, I guess at least, as for why this might not have been like horrendous as far as Ty screwing his jury position, I think entering this week, he probably only beat Joe, Jason, and Scott. And now this week, it's just Scott is gone, which obviously sucks, but I don't think anything, I think he still does beat Jason and Joe. He's just eliminated one person he could have beaten, which is not where you want to be, especially when that person probably would have been happy to sit in the end with you. But at least, or I guess not. I guess we saw Scott directly say he didn't want to sit in the end with Ty, but
yeah, so
nonetheless,
just completely
sure.
Disregard that.
Yeah, sure. I'm curious what you think about Jason going ahead here, because as we've talked about, I think Jason is the losing finalist. I think he will be there in the end. I do not know how it's going to get that. Like, maybe he just runs the table in challenges or something along those lines.
I could see it.
But I also think it's possible that he has really cemented himself now as, like, probably the greatest example is Russell in Heroes versus Villains, where everyone kind of just seemed to understand, okay, we're obviously not going to vote Russell. Everyone but Sandra, by the way, was saying, okay, we're obviously not going to vote Russell out.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine, let's say, we're going into Final 7 now. Let's say they try to put the hit on Ty right now, and that succeeds. And then Final 6, Jason wins immunity. They have to vote someone else out. Then we get to Final 5, and it's...
and that's where Julia goes, by the way, if Jason wins that necklace, I would imagine. Julia or Sydney, I guess.
Right, but they might also think, well, Jason isn't a threat to win, so let's just take out Sydney now, right? Because Sydney could win challenges, she could win a jury vote. You know, she continues to be a bigger threat than he is. Or maybe, let's say, Julia and Michelle are still there going into Final 5, and they think, well, we don't want the two of them together at Final 4, where maybe they could, you know, force a tie or get frisky or do something. So we're going to vote that out now. Or maybe the other way, where if Aubrey, Sydney, and Joe are still there, or like Aubrey, Joe, and Ty, the others might think, we don't want them to have a lock on the votes going forward. So we'll use Jason now because he has nowhere else to go, and that's going to be our move for the time being.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the more I think about that, what you just said, and think about it from specifically Aubrey's point of view, I really, if I'm Aubrey now, I think there are, in virtually every timeline, I want to immediately lock in Sydney if I feel like I can definitely beat Sydney. I think that's critical, is locking her in. And potentially, if need be, using her as like a, oh, Sydney's going to run the table if we don't vote her out now. Like, if you just need to buy a round at some point, I would really be trying to lock in specifically Joe and Sydney for a final three. Because I really do, like you're saying, I love the idea of putting the immediate target on Ty. He's the big pressing issue now. Jason is getting annoying and could run the table later. And then suddenly at final five, oh, we need to take out one of the beauties because they could force a tie at final four. It seems like a lot of things could go really well there for Aubrey until she gets medevaced.
Right. So, yeah, I think Jason is drawing dead, clearly, but he might be able to play Kingmaker, where he's going to have a lot of influence over who gets to beat him in the finals and take home the $1 million.
Yeah, I also feel like we could be getting set up because of the confessional we got this week about Michelle saying, oh, you know, no one's going to vote for them in the end, of Michelle winning the final challenge and saying, I'm going to make the smart, great game decision, and I'm going to go with Jason. Like, I put a lot of thought into this. But, like, you know what? Like, build it up as, like, oh, Michelle's earning her place among the pantheon of great winners by making such a great strategic move as sitting in the end against Jason. That being said, I do also think it's very possible that Jason just wins the final immunity and says, my only chance is against Michelle, again, where it's even potentially Aubrey there in the final three immunity challenge.
Yeah, I could see it being like a Jenna Maraska taking Matt kind of situation where, like,
right,
let's say Michelle wins, knows for sure that there's no way she can beat Aubrey or Sydney, and just decides, well, I'm going to take my chances with Jason.
Right, yeah, and actually, that had been the kind of like edit-wise comparison that I've been meaning to bring up on here for a really long time, is it feels a lot like the Jenna Maraska, hey, here's who goes on to win, this is what you're getting, edit.
Well, see, Jenna's edit was interesting because I think some people saw it sympathetically, and maybe that's the way it was intended to be seen, but so many people just saw that as them shitting over Jenna and showing why she didn't deserve to win. And they were angry when they were angry and surprised when she lost at Matt, because they felt the show just didn't set them up for that and had showed her as being so unlikable and so undeserving of it.
Oh, I think Jenna's edit to this day really stands out as like the least glowing winner's edit anyone has ever received by a pretty, right, who else is even close.
And I kind of like that in the sense that I want to see them warts and all. I want to see the actual reality of what went on out there, but at the same time, you want to come away from the season feeling satisfied about who the winner is. And I would like to feel satisfied about Michelle, but despite their best efforts, I don't think I will be.
Right. I mean, what I mean in saying that I'm comparing it not to Jenna's edit, but to Jenna's kind of story arc, where I could see it easily being the case that Julia is viewed as like the Heidi at Final Five, who is like the much bigger threat, and Michelle's like not really doing anything. And then she just like happens to bink the last couple of challenges and gets to pick the biggest goat in the game to sit in the end with, and just kind of completely backs into the $1 million. Yeah. Very much the same way Jenna Maraska. Like, Maraska got kept around at Final Five because she was threatening to quit if they didn't, you know, if they voted Heidi out. Like, she was, yeah. Okay. Dom, I guess anything else that you even want to be getting into this week from this Survivor episode? What are you looking forward to next week?
I'm looking forward to the complete and utter death of the @MarkTheChicken parody account on Twitter. I have a serious issue with these parody accounts, okay? Because Twitter at this point is just like a graveyard for obsolete parody accounts. You know, I think back to the likes of Kim's Mustache, all the great parody accounts throughout the years, which are going completely unused now, and which have just been lying dormant for the past 2 years, and which hopefully will never surface to see the light of day again. And, you know, I guarantee you, in 2 months, @MarkTheChicken or whatever it is will not be tweeting, funny observations to its 73 Twitter followers or whatever. It's just going to disappear completely from the public consciousness, and that's the way it should be.
All right, you really showed Mark the Chicken, Dom. All right. I think that's going to do it for Survivor. Before we get out of here, I do want to hear your updated takes on Big Brother Canada, if you've been caught up.
I have, and I believe my understanding of it is current. So obviously Ramsey leaves, which throws a wrench in things. I wonder what you think the proper way to handle that is, in terms of, should that be the end of the brothers' HOH week, or should they get to continue and make a new nomination there?
I feel like after the veto has already been played and Ramsey won it himself, he was obviously going to take himself off the block. And they made it, I think in the episode they said, like, Ramsey declared that he was going to use the veto on himself, like prior to the actual veto ceremony being, I think it is certainly like a 2-for-1 if you're the brothers, and it's convenient that it was on the week that Canada got to vote for the HOH. But I think that's certainly within my threshold of acceptability. Like, I'm okay with that. Ramsey was obviously going to take himself off, and it sucks that he left. But as the way I view it is they essentially lost a voter after he won the power of veto rather than a nominee.
Sure. And what do you make of the current situation as it stands now?
Well, I haven't been following the live feeds virtually at all, although I did catch like the last half hour or so of the Friday RHAP show. And from what I gathered on there, between Rob and the three correspondents, they all took different winner picks at this point, and they said four people really had a chance that were left in the house. And those four people were Tim, Cassandra, Jared, and Joel. Now, in our draft, I have Tim and Joel, and you have Cass and Jared. So it's very much coming down to the wire here. This could get really interesting. And from what I gather, it looks like the brothers are probably just going to be toast relatively soon, but I think this could be a pretty fun endgame.
Yeah, and I love that we have so many people who do have a serious chance to win, you know, going into this late stage of the game now.
Who are you rooting for?
I guess in draft terms, I'm rooting for whoever I have, so Cass and Jared. But in personal terms, I don't know. Like, I don't really like any of them. Surprisingly, the person I actually almost like the most is Nikki, as weird as that feels to say. My fear is that Joel is going to win the season. And I say that because I feel like Joel hasn't done anything in the sense of, like, he's not playing well. He's not meshing well with the other house guests. He hasn't kind of, like, really nailed down what's going on in the game. But just because of who he is and how non-threatening he is, everyone else is going to get caught in the crossfire and he's going to move on to victory. And I know that people draw these parallels with Ian and Steve. And we kind of wrote those off a few weeks ago, saying there isn't like a unifying thread between those examples. But if Joel goes on to win, do you think we have to revisit that idea? Like, maybe this just like is the best demographic profile almost to be playing Big Brother with.
Well, I think I said the person in the Joel, Ian, Steve mold, it seems once they get past those first couple weeks, it's just always going to have equity because they're going to be, it seems decently liked. Like, people seem to like hanging out with them for the most part, but not feel... overly threatened by them or like they're gonna like backstab them.
But that's the thing. Based on my understanding of the feed, which admittedly is limited, they don't like hanging out with Joel. They find him kind of irritating and off-putting. Okay. And yet it seems like this is just my impression, that doesn't mean he's gonna be drawing dead automatically for a jury vote. Like, he's still gonna be in contention there.
Yeah, I definitely think Joel, I mean, he certainly is gonna beat Nikki. I could see him. I think it's probably close between him and I'm going to get screamed at by the live feed correspondents. I could see Joel potentially beating Jared. Maybe not. Actually, I think they said Jared might beat at like anyone at this point.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know.
You see that Jared just has like this legion of loyal followers who would just do anything for him.
Yeah.
Because like he has Kelsey's vote on lock. He has the brothers' vote on lock. I imagine. I think Cass would vote for him, although maybe not against Joel. And then Mitch, I know who has said. He said on the way out, he would vote for whichever third wheel member made it to the finals because people would have made a mistake in not taking them out previously. And then Ryle, I think, would also vote for Jared too. So, yeah, I think Jared is the man to beat. I'm curious about Kelsey, though, because you might think if people like Jared so much, that would extend to Kelsey, but it doesn't seem like that would be the case. And then also, she's been evicted and come back, so that has to weigh on people's minds a bit.
Yeah, Kelsey is someone that Joel obviously probably beats almost unanimously as well.
Does anyone beat Kelsey, do you think? And does everyone beat Kelsey is what I mean.
Okay, sorry. Nikki, I would love to see Nikki against Kelsey. I think Nikki probably wins in a landslide.
Really?
Wow. I think it's possible. I don't know. Like, I say all of this not watching the... And by the way, going back to Joel... last week or something, someone I follow that was tweeting about Big Brother tweeted, like, I've been watching the feeds for 3 hours and I had forgotten that Joel was in the house. And one of the live feed correspondents responded, and that's why Joel's going to win the season. I still feel like Joel's definitely in there.
And I see a lot more people saying they wish they could forget that Joel is in the house because whenever he's on screen, they just cringe so badly that it's physically painful for them.
Yeah. You want to know who I'm rooting for, Dom?
Who?
Cassandra. I love Cassandra. I've been I've been a huge, ready for it, Cassandra the whole season.
Jesus
The new Kyung fan.
You're a Cassandra, is what you're saying?
Why? I don't get that one.
Oh, Jesus. You don't spend enough time on Twitter.
Apparently not.
But yeah, I think Cassandra is, for as much as I would absolutely not like her at all in real life, those are the same reasons that I think she's playing very well this season and why I think she has a lot of equity to maybe go on and win here.
I would love Cassandra. I think she looks so fun to hang out with in real life. I think she seems so cool.
I think she would be fun to hang out with, knowing that she would be shit-talking me relentlessly to whoever else was there behind my back.
The same way I think Brittany Haynes seems cool, but I would know the same thing about her, or Courtney Yates.
Right. You can't go in there with any kind of, like, hope of having your ego left intact at the end.
Yeah. What are you thinking about Tim right now? I know he is someone that was being looked upon for a long time as, like, once Mitch went out, oh, it looks like it's Tim's game to lose now. It looks like that he's kind of fallen back into the mix. He was a nominee this week. Granted, that was, you know, because he wanted to go up there and volunteer and make a big move, which apparently that is. You liking what Tim's showing you recently?
Tim, it sounds like he really exposed himself a bit too much last week, and he was playing a bit too fast and loose, and it caught up to him. It mainly caught up to him with the brothers, who it looks like are on their way out the door, so that might not be too bad. And it seems like Kelsey and Jared and Cassandra and Nikki are still with him for the time being, so that's all good. The issue is, like, I don't know who plans on taking Tim to the end. I guess maybe if they think that this whole thing about not letting an international house guest win is in place. And if it is in place, then he needs to be there with Nikki, so that might be a problem. I don't think it would be. I think they would get over it, depending on who he was there against. And if there's some, like, jury roundtable segment with someone who can convince them not to have that way on their minds.
I actually think a really interesting potential finals matchup, because Cass apparently is no longer interested, if she ever was, in going to the end with Tim. I think Tim and Joel would be really, really interesting to see how the jury ended up voting.
Yeah, I actually have no idea how a lot of the votes would fall in that case. I guess it depends on how much people actually are creeped out or annoyed by Joel and whether they're willing to put that aside and weigh that against whatever bitterness they have towards Tim.
Yeah.
But yeah, what you said about Cassandra I think is very crucial, because I don't know if she ever planned on taking him to the end, or maybe she thought for some time that she could beat him and now she no longer thinks that. But it might be like a John and Nedda situation where it's just a question of who's going to cut the other first, and whichever one of them does is going to win the season.
That's what I was. That's the comparison I was going to make, because it seemed like she's definitely gone into, like, almost full Nedda mode. Not to put her on the same level as Nedda, because I certainly can't do that without seeing virtually any of the live feeds. And I don't think that would be in question, even if I was watching all of the live feeds. But she does seem to be switching into that mold of, like, thinking, or switching into that gear of, like, who can I beat?
Yeah, and we might have Nikki filling the role of Sabrina there. Although, actually, a lot more capable than not just Sabrina, but also a few of the other house guests in terms of her strategy at this point.
I would watch Nikki. I hope they put her in the Big Brother US house this summer. I think she should be on every season, even though she's just going to keep getting second place. Just like this little comedy figure. As I've said before, I think every single scene with Nikki should have a laugh track in it. It just seems so fitting there. Yeah.
If Nikki somehow wins this season, that is the perfect summary of the franchise. That is just deserves for every shitty twist they've thrown in for no reason. You know, every overwrought introduction by Arissa, like all of it. That is their perfect outcome. And actually, that might be what they're hoping for, right? Like, would it be that bad for them if Nikki is the new Big Brother Canada winner?
I mean, it's impossible. Maybe this isn't even a priority, but, like, if Nikki ends up winning your season, like, you are throwing out the window the idea that you can be taken seriously as, like, a game of strategy.
Well, I would enjoy it just for the idea that Nikki is a Big Brother winner and Peter Brown is not, and how much that would destroy his fragile ego. Like, that would really just bring it all crumbling down.
Yeah, I mean, I say this on the heels of, I did not watch most of Big Brother Canada 3, but after being at the hashtag podcast house during Know It Alls and hearing a lot about it from Jordan, Sarah winning apparently was just like a function of having essentially the power to do whatever she wanted like 6 weeks in a row. So I don't know how much of a game of strategy we're even really talking about at this point, but it does seem like they're going back in the right direction at least. Dom, I take it you're still not a big Arissa Cox fan while we're on the subject?
No, and she's running out of time to convince me otherwise, but I don't think she cares about convincing me otherwise. So, you know, keep doing your thing, I guess.
I don't think she cares either. Anything else you want to get to before we get out of here?
I think that's all for this week.
All right, excellent. Thank you guys very much for tuning in. You can follow Dom on Twitter at DomHRV. I am at Colin Stone. You can email us, domandcolin@gmail.com. Anything else before we leave?
You can also follow at Mark the Chicken, I believe, if you're so inclined.
Yeah, one of Dom's top follows for the week.
Although, actually, hold on.
Okay, shocking development.
Oh. Yeah, okay, so at Mark the Chicken is apparently an actual person, not a chicken. But they haven't tweeted in 4 or 5 years, so if...
Bring them out of retirement. Let's get it going. Tweet at Mark the Chicken.
I'm sure they've actually got a few tweets this week that just make literally no sense to them whatsoever.
Actually, along those same lines, I had someone at Live Know-It-Alls tell me, I could never make this up if I tried. They said, like, oh my God, I follow you on Twitter. I don't follow Dom, but I do follow at Dom Harvey. I thought that was so funny.
It is still more depressing than I'd like to admit that you have so many more Twitter followers than me. And I'd like to think that that's the reason. It's just a case of mistaken identity.
It's because you don't tweet. I mean, I tweet 4 times as much as you. And even if my tweets are, 40% of the content, of the quality, I guess, it's still going to add up. It's all about volume here, Dom. Haven't you ever heard the standard idiom, it's all about quantity over quality? I think that's a thing, right?
Sure.
All right. Well, you guys all know where to find us on Twitter. And that's going to do it. All right. Take care, everybody.